Hello and welcome to Radio Entrepreneurs. My name is Alex Cooper. I'm here today with Walter Sullivan of Pretty Clarity, and we're doing one of our In the Weeds episodes today. And our guest today is Chris Kane. And Chris is joining us by telephone. So Chris, are you there?
I am here, yes. Thanks for having me on.
Chris, thanks for joining us today. You're the president and founder of Forefront Ventures. You've been really on the forefront, especially in Massachusetts, both on medical and recreational. Why don't you give us an idea of what Forefront is about?
Sure. So we are a multi-state operator of marijuana dispensaries, cultivation facilities, infused product manufacturers. We have operations that are in either operational or in construction phase in Massachusetts, Illinois, Pennsylvania, and Maryland. And we also have a consulting side of the business, which has been around since 2011, where we work with aspiring operators across the United States to help them obtain licenses in what are very difficult application processes, and then provide them with best practices and operational training.
And you also get involved in investment as well, correct?
Yes, primarily with businesses that we have some sort of operational role in. But yes, we're sort of constantly raising money and putting money to work in the space.
What do you see the biggest, I mean, you've been doing this for a long time, and you've been very successful, you know, being from Massachusetts, I find that you've been very successful here. And I know you've been successful in other states. What do you see the biggest issues for someone entering into this business that you've seen?
Ooh, how much time do we have? <That's> it's a tough business. I mean, a lot of people think that, because it's marijuana, it means it's like a license to print money and this is really easy. And, it's not. There are a lot more hurdles facing folks in the cannabis industry than people face in basically any other industry. It's very expensive to get involved. It's very capital intensive, especially on the cultivation side. Most states have a limited number of licenses available, and they're quite competitive to win those licenses. So you have to be able to put together a really top-notch team and a really top-notch proposal to get those licenses. There are scalability issues in cannabis that you don't face in other industries. So, for example, if you have a really successful edibles line in Colorado and you want to expand that into Arizona, which is also a legal medical marijuana state, you can't just ramp up your production facility in Colorado and start shipping product into Arizona like you would if you had, say, a successful microbrew that you wanted to expand. You have to go to Arizona and get an entirely new permit, which may not be available. It may be very expensive. The regulations around what you can do in terms of production may be different than what you did in another state. And so your SOPs and your protocols in one state may not even be applicable in the next state. And then, of course, there are issues with access to banking. Entrepreneurs in this industry cannot access traditional lending. You cannot get a bank loan or money from any traditional institutions. So all of your money has to come from basically individual investors, angels, family offices. And there are tax issues that we face in the cannabis industry that others don't, particularly the 280E provision of the IRS tax code that treats state legal and licensed marijuana businesses the same as they treat illegal drug traffickers, which means basically that we're not allowed to write off any of our expenses as standard business deductions. That's just sort of scratching the surface, but that's sort of some of the litany of challenges that we face in the cannabis industry that aren't really applicable in just about any other business.
I find when I'm dealing with people and looking to get into the cannabis business, they think just because they can grow good weed, they can get into the business. And they go out looking for investors, and they don't really have a plan. That's the part they don't understand. So you advise people about getting into the business. What advice would you give the people that are on our show listening?
So I would say, really do your research. First off, figure out what state you want to operate in, because this is a state-by-state industry. And the rules are very different in different states. And so the barriers to entry are going to be very different in different states. I think if you're going to get involved in general, you want to make sure that you have enough capital to follow through on your plans, especially if you're on the cultivation side. Building out a licensed cultivation facility is very expensive. So making sure you have some, you know, good investors bought in early on is really important. You cannot rely on, you know, investors just coming out of the woodwork once you get a license, which I think a lot of the folks that you're talking about, you know, wind up thinking, right? That's a mistake. That's a very common mistake. And, you know, I'm just going to go and get, I'm going to raise enough to get a license, and then, you know, the money's going to be there. And they wind up spending the next year or two, you know, scraping together small investment to try and get themselves open, to have as much of that done as you can. And one of the things that's fairly unique to this industry is you really need good support from the community that you plan to locate in. Almost every state requires some degree of demonstrated local support, whether that's letters of support from local businesses, local politicians. Sometimes it's an actual letter of support issued by a city council or a governing body or mayor. And even if they don't require that at the state level, zoning around this at the local level is really challenging. And so if a town doesn't really want you there, they're going to be able to find a way to keep you out by denying zoning authorizations, use permits. So it's always important once you've identified where you're going to go to make sure that you really build some goodwill in the community. And that is that's a struggle, right? You've got to go knock door to door. You've got to meet with politicians. I would usually recommend hiring a local land use attorney who knows, you know, all the influence makers and all the elected officials in town, and spend a good amount of time while you're preparing to get a license, really earning goodwill in that community. Because you could get to the point where you get a license from a state and you find that you have nowhere to go to open, and you've got to spend the next 6 months to a year trying to find a new community and earn goodwill there.
You know, I find amazing is that, you know, each city or town in Massachusetts is required to zone medical marijuana. We won't get into rec yet. So you're required to do it, and what the state ended up throwing in, the requirement of a letter of support or a letter of non-opposition. Reality is that basically gives the town the ability to zone it out. Would you agree?
That's exactly right, yes. So the state did say that you, or the towns cannot zone it out of existence, and they cannot ban it. But they do require, you're absolutely right, a letter of support or a letter of non-opposition that issued by the town government or the mayor as a mandatory component of the application. And the problem with that has been there is no legal definition or legal criteria that a town has to follow in determining whether or not they're going to grant one of these letters. So, you know, for example, if you are applying for a special use permit, which is also generally required in most of these towns, for a special use permit, if your application checks off all of the mandatory boxes and doesn't require any kind of variance, the zoning board is not allowed to deny you that license just because they don't want a dispensary in town. If they do that, you can appeal it and you'll win that every time. But with a letter of support, there's no defined criteria that the town has to follow. So as long as they don't say, we don't want this in our town, they can come up with just about any other reason to deny, right? They're not allowed to ban. So if they say that, you could probably appeal that and win, but then they can just come back and say, you know what? There's a lot of community opposition to the location that you've chosen. We just don't think this is the right location in town for it. And they can deny you that letter. And they can just deny letters indefinitely for whatever reasons they want. And that has led to, under the medical program, probably half or more of the jurisdictions around the state of Massachusetts de facto banning any kind of medical marijuana businesses from their town.
Would you say, man, what I find, you know, Massachusetts went from a beauty contest for a medical marijuana license to market-driven under Governor Baker. But the reality is that given the limited amount of communities that will take you, do you think they're somewhat piling up on top of one another?
They're not really, actually. And that also has to do with the fact that, these towns generally aren't willing to grant many letters. I believe the most dispensaries that any one town has approved was 5, and that was in Somerville, which is a fairly high population town. Cambridge has approved 3, maybe 4 at this point, but
they just got approved.
And only 2 of those are open. Right. So we really have, even in the city of Boston, they've only approved 4 to date. Now Boston will approve more. There's a bunch more in the pipeline in Boston, but Boston's is a huge city. So we actually haven't seen that happen. The overwhelming number of towns that have granted letters have only granted one. Most towns have sort of taken the approach of, look, we're going to do this slowly. We're going to pick our horse. We're going to let them get up and running. We're going to see how this works before we decide if we're going to let anyone else in town. So we really haven't seen that stacking issue. In fact, if anything, we're seeing, you know, we're seeing a problem with too few dispensaries around the state and causing a patient access issue.
Well, they, you know, that really becomes the big issue for patient access. You see, making it difficult with the hardship issue, the state not really issuing hardship licenses, even though there are not enough dispensaries to support the need.
That's right.
You mentioned one of the things, big issue about getting in, especially on the medical side, you know, at least under the old law, requiring that you be vertically integrated. What do you think the cost is of getting into this business for somebody? I think that's what gets lost by some of these people.
Sure. Well, so for a vertically integrated operation, and for listeners who aren't aware of what that term means, it means that in Massachusetts and a number of other states, in fact, this has been fairly predominant in the Northeast, they require that you have a vertically integrated business, which means that you have to produce everything that you sell out of your dispensary. So there's no wholesale market, right? It would be the equivalent of somebody saying, I'm going to open up a Gap and, open up a Gap clothing store. They would have to, you know, grow all of the cotton and produce all the synthetic materials and make all of the clothing that's sold out of their own store. But you have to be a cultivator, manufacturer, producer, distributor, and dispensary all in one license, which makes it very expensive. Realistically, to open a vertically integrated facility that's going to be able to meet market demand in any market with any sort of population, or not even talking about high population density areas, you're really looking at a $4 to $7 million project. The overwhelming majority of that goes into building out the cultivation facility. That part is by far the most expensive. If you're going to build a grow of any reasonable size, there's just no way to do it for under $1 million. And really, $2 million would be low. Most of these are in the $3 to $5 million range. And then you've got to build out a commercial kitchen. You've got to build out a processing lab. You've got to build out a retail dispensary, which will cost you anywhere from $500,000 to $1 million. So you're really in that probably $4 to $7 million range to build out a vertically integrated operation.
Right. I find some of the dispensaries in Massachusetts have, started out, I think it was only going to be a few million, then got up to the 7 million. Some are going over 15. And some are even looking, given the rec coming in, going to be costing over 20. Down the road, I think.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to build out a 80,000 square foot warehouse grow, or 100,000 square foot warehouse grow, which I think some companies are preparing to do to get ready for the increase in demand with the adult use market. Yeah, that's a 8-figure number. There's just kind of no way around that, unfortunately, particularly if you're doing indoor, which most growers, especially in the Northeast, still grow in indoor facilities. The HVAC equipment and the lighting for that, there's just nothing you can do about it. That's just a huge expense, and there's virtually no way to cut down on that.
Yeah. Massachusetts is going to allow outside grows. Do you think it's economically feasible to do an outside grow in Massachusetts?
It's an open question, to be honest. There's a real debate about that. We've run a lot of numbers looking at greenhouse in particular, which is where, by and large, I think the industry is moving from outdoor, from indoor into greenhouses. Outdoor presents its own challenges, a little bit harder to do, quality control for environmental standards outside. But in a greenhouse, you kind of get the best of both worlds. You've got environmental controls, and you've got the sun, which is free, as opposed to paying, a lot of money for your electrical lighting costs. Although, if you want to grow if you want to grow really efficiently in a greenhouse, you supplement with lights. As well, so you do have some ongoing electrical costs, but significantly less than you would in an indoor facility. The problem with greenhouses and outdoor has its own problems as well in Massachusetts, is that you've got really large swings in temperature and humidity that you don't have in some of the western states, where you're starting to see really large greenhouse production. The plants in particular put off a lot of moisture. And so the amount of money that you need to spend for environmental control on greenhouses in the Northeast is almost equivalent to the extra money that you would be spending in electrical costs for an indoor grow. So we think that the cost of indoor versus greenhouse is somewhat comparable in Massachusetts. Still would prefer to do it because of the environmental footprint that you leave on an indoor grow is going to be much worse than on a greenhouse grow. You know, for outdoor, you can do it. It's just really not the best conditions for outdoor cultivation in Massachusetts. You have a much shorter harvest season than you would have in a warmer climate or in California in the Pacific Northwest. The atmospheric conditions are not as good. It's a little bit too humid for the plants. So I think where you'll likely see outdoor in Massachusetts is cannabis that's being grown exclusively for extraction. I don't think that you'll see outdoor buds, right? Outdoor marijuana flowers, or you see very little of that in Massachusetts because the quality is just not going to be there. Not going to be like what you would get with really good outdoor production in Oregon or Northern California or like Washington State. But you could grow it really cheaply outdoors and then run all of that through extraction and use those oils for other kinds of infused products.
So I find, I didn't think of what you talked about is that in a lot of respects in New England, you're better off doing a brick and mortar building for cultivation than a greenhouse. And if people are pushing,
it's comparable
for greenhouses.
Yeah, I mean, there still is a reason to push greenhouses because again, the environmental footprint of an indoor is still significantly worse. You know, from a cost standpoint, they're fairly comparable. Your major cost in an indoor facility is going to be electric for your lights and your HVAC. Your big cost is in a greenhouse is going to be environmental control and humidity control. But that is that's much less energy intensive. So your carbon footprint, for example, in an indoor facility is going to be much worse from an environmental standpoint than a greenhouse will be, even if your costs are relatively comparable.
You mentioned in the beginning that the big issue is one, finding a location, how much money it's going to cost you in a community. And I agree with you 110%. I find a lot of people, especially on the medical side, in the first and second round of licensing, really didn't think about that. And some of these people are still just sitting there because they haven't found a location truly, and they waited till after they got approved to start really looking for funders. If you're looking, so we talk about local community and we talked about property, what do you do with looking for funders before you get going? What advice would you give?
So this is probably the most difficult part of this industry. Because just by way of example, right? So my company is opening one of the four dispensaries that are licensed in Worcester. We're under construction now. That facility will hopefully be open by the July 1st date to transition to adult use. Although given construction timelines in Massachusetts, it's going to be a little bit longer. But by way of example, right? If we had been granted one of four liquor licenses in the entire city of Worcester, any bank in the country would give us a small business loan, right? It would be simple to go out and raise this money. We could get it at a relatively low interest rate because it's a secured permit. It's a business that is going to kick off a lot of cash flow, and it would be relatively easy to fund. But because this is federally illegal and banks are not available, and institutional lending is not available, that money has to come from individual investors and in some cases from family offices. The problem is with individual investors, unlike institutional lenders, they're not generally looking for just an interest rate return, right? Individual investors, by and large, are looking for equity investment, which is very reasonable of them. So it becomes much more dilutive to raise money in this industry than it would in other comparable industries. So you really need to start with your own network. You need to start talking to, almost everybody starts with friends and family. And from there, building out anybody that in the business world that has money, you need to start having those conversations early. There are a few cannabis-focused funds that have been launched, but frankly, there are not many of them. There's not a whole lot of money available. And if you're sort of a mom-and-pop startup, they're probably not going to be interested in that business. They're generally looking for, you know, for bigger projects. So you really kind of have to tap your own network. And this is one of the things that I actually talk about is a real downfall of, one of the major downfalls of this industry existing in a federally illegal environment, in that it really disadvantages the small players. It makes it so much more difficult because, again, a smaller player, if you, you know, you want to open a mom and pop dispensary, you get a license. In any other industry, you go and you get a loan from a bank and you can open it up. But because that's not available, because that institutional money is not available to the cannabis industry, it really favors the entrepreneurs who have access to high net worth individuals. And so if you're a regular mom and pop, you know, trying to open a dispensary, you're less likely to know a lot of rich people, a lot of wealthy people. And it just compounds how much more difficult it is for these smaller players to get involved. And unfortunately, I don't have a really good answer to that. I mean, the best thing you can do is start with your friends and family, start with your own network, start with your own business networks. And then you can reach out to, you know, firms like ours to a degree. There are other firms out there that if you wind up partnering with a major national company, that's going to open up a lot more doors to investment. And so if you can find a company that's willing to partner with you on the project, you know, that will help. But those are really the avenues that are available to entrepreneurs in the cannabis industry.
You know, one of the things I find in life that, you know, I may know a lot of people that like me, but when you're out looking to do a business, you know, it's about what value do you add? And I think that's some part that gets lost in this whole thing for people starting out. What would you talk about the value?
Obviously, I think any investor is going to look at it and say, why would I put this money into you as opposed to any other business? And that's where I think, particularly for smaller business owners, right, or you know, people who are just trying to get in, that's where I actually come back to this idea of community involvement, right? If you can show an investor, hey, you know, I live in this town, let's pick a random town in Massachusetts, right? I live in Billerica, and I know everybody in town, I know all the city council members, and they're all friends of mine, and this town is going to basically box out anybody else who wants to get in. I'm the only one that's going to be here because they trust me to do this in an industry that is new and, you know, somewhat scary. That's real value, right? If you have an investor that's looking for a project, or you have a company that's looking to partner with somebody, that's real value you can provide. It's saying, I can navigate the local environment. I can ensure that we're going to get that letter of support, right, that we're going to get the zoning approval. Like that's a place that I think somebody can add real value that a bigger company can't get on their own.
Thank you, Chris. You've been a font of knowledge today. We're running out of time. Quickly, if people want to get in touch with you, what's the best way for them to reach you?
They can go right onto our website. It's forefrontventures.com. It's the numeral 4 and then spelled out Front Ventures. Check out our website, forefrontventures.com. At Forefront Ventures is our Twitter handle. You can search us on Facebook as well. You can reach out to us in any of those places, and we'd be happy to talk about opportunities in the space.
Chris, thanks for being on the show.
Yes, thank you very much.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me.